five hosts, four divisions, all battling it out for the Holy Grail of the American Hockey League, the Calder Cup. This is the Holy Grail Podcast. Here are your hosts, Zach Power, Andrew Rinaldi, Corey Swartz, and Dina Weinheimer.
Well, hello, and welcome to episode 70 of Field Pass Hockey's AHL podcast, The Holy Grail. This is the episode for June 15th, and we're here to give you a recap of the last week in AHL hockey. We're in the Calder Cup Finals. We are three games into it. Game four is tonight in Hershey. Corey Reppin. All the gear, all the swag. He's going to have a lot to talk about. This one may get a little spicy. I don't know. We'll see how riled up he can get. But we've got all four of your hosts here today. But before that, just a reintroduction, because it's been a bit since all four of us have been here. So let's get reacquainted here. As always, I have an introductory question. Guys, real quick, Chicago going independent, hot or not?
Am I allowed to even talk about this subject on the beat or?
Yes.
Okay. Well, for those who aren't familiar, I'm Andrew Rinaldi. I cover the Chicago Wolves and Grand Rapids Griffins. I'm saying this is, I get where they're going from it. I think this is going to be super ice cold for the Wolves this season coming up. I'm all for independence. I mean, 4th of July is right around the corner, but I'm already looking at some of these roster moves, and I'm a little nervous about it. I don't know about you guys.
I'm Corey Swartz. I'm your resident Hershey Bears fan. Some would even say a little too much of a Hershey Bears fan, but, you know. With this one, it's kind of an interesting situation just because it's so unprecedented. I mean, you know, when was the last time we even had someone even thinking about going independent in the AHL? I mean, it certainly would seemingly predate even, you know, my time being a, you know, fan of the Bears and following the AHL and stuff. Like, it's just unheard of anymore. So I would say it's hot in that the respect that it's, you know, it's super unique and, you know, certainly bold of the Chicago Wolves as an organization to try to go this route. I was kind of looking for, you know, I think me and Andrew talked about it at least one point in the past where it seemed like there was the potential they might go back, you know, get back with your ex type of thing with the Carolina organization. But then it kind of seemed to pivot, and now it seems like it's, you know, almost for sure going to happen. So it's unique, but I'm not sure if it's smart just because, you know, you have that just quality drop off. You know, you can get quality AHLers and field a decently competitive team. But, you know, there's just a tier of teams that have AHL, you know, NHL quality prospects, and then there's just teams that do. Like, it's just, it's another step up. So, you know, we saw it especially, like, you know, if you guys, you know, were following back along the 04-05 lockout, you could tell which teams had NHL talent pumped into their veins and which ones did not. And that's why the Philadelphia Phantoms won the Calder Cup. It's because they had, you know, the Mike Richards, Patrick Sharps, the Jeff Carters of the world. You know, it was just a whole different world. And, you know, I think that just absolutely makes a difference then as well as now.
And I'm Dina Weinheimer. I cover the Cleveland Monsters here at Field Pass Hockey. Follow me on Twitter, FPH Monsters. For me, this is going to be a nod. At first, I thought, well, this could be kind of interesting because, you know, you could get some really quality unsized guys or unsigned players to get in there, because we have to remember in the AHL we have that veteran rule, so they can't just go out and get all the top free agents, you know, with that sell of, well, you won't have to worry about NHL call-ups, you know, decimating the team. So, you know, first I thought, okay, this could work, and now I'm seeing on Monday, and we might talk about this a little bit more, that instead, it looks like they're going for ECHL talent to kind of field that younger requirement. And honestly, I don't know how that's going to work out for them, because instead of, you know, that fringe AHL, ECHL talent being the call-ups, they might be the guys that they are going to go for the entire season. And that is a little concerning for me.
For sure. And I'm Zach Power. It's got to be cold for me, but the water is definitely tainted. I can't see how this could be a good mark for Scott, that he wasn't able to kind of figure this out going into the season upcoming. And I mean, like, otherwise he's been a fantastic league president, but you also have to think about, I'm thinking that there's going to be a lot more of a lean on maybe some CHL players, maybe some college players. That's where I might kind of think of, we might start to see some of these younger guys try to take over. But, you know, as a team, I don't think I'm going to be ready to give up my top level talent to who might be a fringe call up in the AHL to kind of give them to this team, because I think that this team is going to be looking for something a little more long term, a little good, but they're not going to be able to get that AHL ready defenseman or offenseman without going deep into an ECHL lineup. So it's going to be an interesting one for sure, with some names that be some HL fans might not be accustomed to.
Well, as we're recording this, we're getting a couple pieces of breaking news coming across the AHL world here. First, we have a brand new signing coming in for the Cleveland Monsters and the Columbus Blue Jackets, who are re-upping forward Josh Dunn, 1 year, two-way contract. Huge piece for the Cleveland Monsters. That was a key re-signing there, that coming in. But also, Bakersfield Condors have just posted a statement from one of their players, Noah Phillip, who is stepping away from hockey. The quote is, "I want to start off by thanking the Edmonton Oilers and Bakersfield Condors. The treatment of players and overall atmosphere they've created is amazing. I have nothing but respect for everyone within both organizations, and I'll always be grateful for the opportunity I received. I'm at a time in my life where I want to focus on things outside the realm of hockey. I'm doing well and wish all the best to the players, coaches, and staff in Bakersfield and in Edmonton." And then they closed the statement by saying that the Condors are wishing him all the best in his future endeavors. But that literally just came down the pipeline earlier this hour as we're recording, and just a couple pieces of big breaking news. I mean, inevitably these things with Noah Phillip happen, but it's always, I always hope that everything truly is okay and they're just doing whatever they feel is best for them and their families. So definitely wishing all the best to him moving forward. All right, we're going to go ahead and jump right on into our weekly news recap, because there is a lot of news that has hit the AHL in the past week. And first of all, we're going to talk about coaching. Every roster starts with the coach, and there are some changes coming, particularly in the North and Central Division. Zach, would you like to talk a little bit about some changes that are coming down the pipe for the Rochester Americans?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, after making it to the conference finals, the Rochester Americans, their assistant coach Mike Weber has been called to the big leagues, where he's now going to be serving as an assistant coach for the St. Louis Blues. Now, he's been with the team for the past three seasons, and he also adds a little bit of experience on top of that, as not only an NHL player previously, but he also spent time as an assistant coach of the OHL's Windsor Spitfires. So congratulations to him, and he'll be joining their team up there.
Honestly, with the performance that the Rochester Americans have put in, especially the last two seasons, a move like this was just inevitable. I mean, somebody was going to get that call from that coaching staff, because they got the best out of the players there in that system. So also, like we mentioned, in the Central Division, two coaching changes announced here within the first couple of days of this week, and they're both impacting Andrew's beat. So I'm just going to let Andrew take it away here. And yeah, there's a change in Chicago and in Grand Rapids.
Yeah, for sure. So with the news of Chicago going independent, as we've kind of already talked about, going to have the need to get a new bench boss on top of a new roster. Well, they kind of have one already in-house, and that's former assistant coach Bob Nardella. He's been promoted to the head coaching role for the first time in his career. He's been an assistant with the Wolves since 2016, which covers three different affiliations. And now as they're going independent, well, he's got the helm of the ship. It's going to be an interesting year for sure there in Chicago. So we'll see how a veteran presence like Nardella will have on that roster. But turning over on the other side of Lake Michigan in the Grand Rapids, the Red Wings announced on Wednesday that Dan Watson, the former head coach of the Toledo Walleye and down in the coast, will be taking over and replacing the void left when Ben Simmons' contract wasn't renewed. So a lot of changes happening over there in Grand Rapids as well, on top of, you know, a lot of young players like Carter Mazur, Amadeus Lombardi that are going to be coming in. Now I feel like there's definitely a point coming from up top in Detroit and certainly from general manager Sean Horkoff to get the system kind of more in line of what's been going on up in Detroit. And what better than the guy who was the assistant coach for Derek Lalonde down in Toledo? Now you have Lalonde up manning the bench in Detroit, and you got Watson down here in Grand Rapids. So now that it's a little more parallel between parent club and farm team, and hopefully maybe some postseason hockey coming back to Grand Rapids, because the last couple of years have been a little tough, but you know, a couple fresh faces, some new coaching staff. I don't think we're done seeing Brian Lashoff. I know he hung the skates up, but I think you're going to see him behind the bench here. We'll bring you some more of that information as the news comes down the pipeline. But yeah, couple new faces behind the bench here in the Central Division. Both my beats going to be some new faces to get used to, new voices as we're getting into the post game interviews. I'm gonna miss Simon, gonna miss Coach Shahan, but you know, it's all, everyone's moving on up into the next role. It's a lot like the players at this level as well. So I'm excited. I know they're all excited and ready to get. Is it October yet? I mean, I haven't covered a game for either of my beats in quite a while now.
I hear you so loud.
You have to
on
compete
that one
for those roles too, hey?
Don't.
Yeah.
I'm not. There's. Wait. I can't say it on the air, but I can't.
Well, if Watson's performance in Toledo says anything about what his track record is going to be in Grand Rapids, Grand Rapids fans are in for a nice run of appearances in the playoffs. And if you guys don't know him at all, his style as a coach, his style just kind of as a person, you know, off the ice, I already told Andrew in our group chat that he is going to love interviewing Dan Watson. Just a very kind person. Last season, I covered a couple of playoff games down in Cincinnati, and he was the visiting coach. Normally, visiting coaches don't make time for press. You know, they get their team together, get them back on the bus, get back to the hotel. No, literally last second request. He stopped on his way to the bus and gave me about 5 minutes of his time, pretty much on back-to-back nights. He's amazing. I was kind of wondering who was going to get the call up first, him or Jason Payne, head coach of the Cincinnati Cyclones. I knew one of them was going to be making a jump soon. So, yeah, I'm glad I didn't put money on it, because I don't know if I would have had that one right. But congratulations all around. And Andrew, do you want to talk about some of those roster moves from the Chicago Wolves today? Or are we just going to kind of sigh and move on?
I can talk about them for sure. So also on Wednesday, Chicago announced that they've signed three new players to AHL contracts. We have defenseman Matt Donovan and forwards Hank Crone and Timothy Doherty. Now, Donovan has been in this league for a number of seasons. He's actually been bouncing back and forth between the AHL, a couple cups of coffee in the NHL, and a couple stints in Europe between Sweden and most recently Germany. So presumably he's going to fill one of those veteran slots, which lines up along with Corey Conacher, who was signed earlier in the month. And again, we'll talk about like roster construction and all that later on. But, Crone and Doherty are kind of more ECHL level producers for the most part, and they'll be making their AHL debuts here in Chicago, at least full time. And this is where like the independence thing comes in, and I was very intrigued to see where they would learn to, where they would look to fill out the depth, where you're not going to have the NHL prospects anymore along your second, third, fourth lines. And it looks like they're leaning towards a lot of guys who are decent producers at the coast level. But for example, you know, I remember the Wolves bringing in Stephen Harper a couple years ago after he finished MVP in the Kelly Cup. Didn't really make an impact in Chicago. So if they're looking to fill out their roster with this, it's probably, this is why I was going ice cold not when I was going earlier on the independence movement. Freedom always sounds great until you actually have to put it in the practice. But maybe their practices are going to run a little better with Nardella at the helm. Maybe they'll come out and surprise me. I would love to be wrong here, but just a couple. It's really only about five spots that have been filled out so far here with the Wolves. You can get excited about how they're going to attack differently and how their focus isn't going to be so much on development. It's going to be about the W's and all that. You got to have guys who are going to buy into the system, and you got to have guys that are going to be able to step up to legitimate players that have earned NHL contracts that you're not going to be able to have access to as an AHL franchise. Can they get it done? Yes, certainly. We just saw an 8 seed make a run to the cup in the NHL. So anyone who can buy in and get a couple good matchups, they can make anything happen. On paper, it looks a little different, but that's the direction that they wanted to go, and we'll see if it works out.
So we did get a little bit of a scouting report on Hank Crone, who was Rookie of the Year and the most valuable player in the ECHL for this past season. 49 goals, 56 assists for 105 points in 69 games for the Allen Americans. But my fellow managing editor and former ECHL editor covers the Wichita Thunder for us, Matthew Harding. He says that Crone is undersized, but has tremendous vision and a great shot. I've heard that. Like, I love seeing undersized players because they always have something else to prove. And I'm curious how that's going to transfer to the AHL, or is he just going to be like a Trayfix Wolanski, a TJ Tynan, and just blow up the score sheets here?
And maybe this could be my hot take too, but you know, I do think that the ECHL is a lot more crash and bang than the AHL is. So maybe, you know, he comes out of this thinking, okay, well, I've had to use my speed and my other abilities to be able to shift around and score more. So maybe this could be a good translation for him to kind of get out of that crash and bang. But that's just me. That's the way I kind of see ECHL games, with a lot more of that physicality.
And I know Corey is itching to talk Calder Cup Finals, but before we do that, this is an American Hockey League podcast, so of course there's going to be some carryover with the NHL, and we do have to talk very briefly about the Stanley Cup that was awarded on Tuesday night to the Vegas Golden Knights, their first in franchise history, so many congratulations to them, but even more hearty congratulations to all of the American Hockey League graduates that got to hoist the most penultimate Holy Grail in hockey. And Zach's going to talk about a few of the skaters and goalies that joined that list.
For sure. And we talked about the Hurricanes franchise, or the former Hurricanes franchise, as we should say. And congrats to Nick Waugh, who held the Stanley Cup over his head this week. He's now the 130th player to win both the Calder Cup and Stanley Cup. And of course, he was with the Charlotte Checkers when he won the AHL's Calder Cup. Another cool fact, Stanley Cup champion and Conn Smythe winner Jonathan Marchessault also spent time in the American Hockey League. He played as an all-star when he was with the Providence Bruins and joins a pretty exclusive club of AHL grads to hold that Conn Smythe Trophy. Some of those grads who did hoist the Stanley Cup, which is the big prize, this week were Mark Stone, William Carlson, Chandler Stephenson, and of course, Aiden Hill, who spent some time with the Henderson Silver Knights.
And then behind the bench, of course, someone kind of close to my heart as a former Lake Erie Monster, a captain at that, for that 2016 Calder Cup winner. Like, literally, and I hope Corey gets to experience this playoffs. Like, seeing your team hoist the Calder Cup, like, I literally still get goosebumps just thinking about it. But Ryan Craig, assistant coach for the Vegas Golden Knights, got to lift that cup. So he is one of those dual cup lifters, not as a player, but once as a player, once as a coach. And I mean, he's right behind Bruce Cassidy, the AHL Coach of the Year in 2001, 2002 with Grand Rapids. I know Andrew's excited to hear that first former Grand Rapids coach to hoist the Stanley Cup. They're finally getting that notoriety. And finally, fellow assistant John Stevens is an AHL Hall of Famer with three Calders as a player, a fourth one as a coach. Just an impressive list. And it just goes to show you the American Hockey League is a true development league for the top players and coaches in the National Hockey League. And that list is just going to keep growing. And you have to wonder, out of everyone that's on a roster this season, who's going to be next? Okay, and then we're going to move right along. We're going to get out of cup talk. We have just a couple more things, and then we're going to turn Corey loose on y'all. But there is an affiliation change happening in the Central Division. So once again, I'm just going to let Andrew take over on that. But Milwaukee Admirals fans, get ready for a change.
Yeah, they're going to be getting some players from Blue Land down there in Atlanta. And it's not going to be for the Thrashers, but the Atlanta Gladiators of the ECHL. They've announced their affiliation to link up with the Milwaukee Admirals and, by extension, the Nashville Predators. So a nice little pipeline there coming from deep south into the Midwest and then not as deep south, but still a little kind of Southern. I mean, they got all the country music and everything. I assume that Nashville refers to itself as Southern. At least up here in the North, we refer to it as Southern. Anyway.
Does Andre Pavlik come with this deal? Or Kovalchuk?
Maybe a little bit of Dustin Byfuglien. Like, if you can find yourself an early Dustin Byfuglien jersey, that would be phenomenal. I can, anytime I can get myself a plug in some big buff, I take the chance and I send it. So, yeah, I mean, the Gladiators draw more than the Thrashers ever did, as far as I know. But, new pipeline opening up there for the Admirals, which has, considering what they did with their ECHL call-ups at the end of the season, when basically their entire roster got called up to Nashville in terms of trades and injuries, this actually, you might want to get to know your ECHL players down there in Atlanta, because they're probably going to end up being Admirals at some point.
Columbus, Cleveland, and wow, Kalamazoo, I'll send their regards for sure. And speaking of Cleveland, if you're going to be in the Cleveland, Ohio area and interested in hockey history, this section of the show is for you. So on Monday, the Monsters are hosting the NHL's United by Hockey Mobile Museum in honor of Juneteenth. Now, the Mobile Museum, it's a way for you to celebrate hockey's change makers, which spans across underrepresented and multicultural demographics. So you have that to walk through, see, enjoy. But the Monsters are also welcoming hockey fans of all skill levels and experience to try street hockey and their inflatable street hockey rink. It's going to be open throughout the day with instructors on hand for a quick introduction and a chance to play in some mini games. And of course, the famous, in my mind, Monster Summer Tour, also going to be making a stop at the Van Aken District with temporary tattoos, giveaways, games, and of course, in addition to the Monster Takeover, they're going to be keeping you cool inside Market Hall with movie screening, including The Cannons, Ice Queens, and Soul on Ice. past, present, and future. A lot of other activities and programs are being planned by Van Aken District in observance of the Juneteenth holiday, including performances by Chevron Studios and et cetera. If you're interested, check out the Monsters website for more details. And I am literally brokenhearted that I have to work my normal day job on Monday and I can't go to this. As I'm excited just by reading the press release, seeing the photos. The Monsters always put on top-notch community events. This is going to be no exception. So if you go, take a few pictures and tweet them my way at FPH Monsters. But now, it is time to unleash our very own Corey Swartz here to talk about the Calder Cup final series. And if you haven't read it yet, Corey, before I let you loose here, if you haven't read it already, check out Zach Powers and my collab on 13 fun and interesting facts behind this year's Calder Cup playoffs. The teams are both very close, yet very much opposites in a lot of different areas. I know it sounds vague, but go read it. You'll see what I mean. So, Corey, where would you like to start? There's so much news around the Calder Cup playoffs, and they're really kind of chaotic.
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting situation when so we're coming off of game three where the Bears took a 5-4 decision in overtime. Probably one of the most emotion swings I think I've been into a game all season in terms of, you know, just kind of that nervous energy. You know, you go from the highs to the lows, you know, just a lot of different elements too. But the Bears bounced back. I mean, you know, it's easy to look at the scores of the first two games and say, hey, these two games were unmitigated disasters by the look of it. In some respects, they were. But, you know, the scores, I think, looked worse than what they really were in the play. You know, obviously, there was some, you know, some elements where you'd say, oof, they ran, you know, some oofs, as we used to say, where, you know, where Coachella Valley really snowballed it into a, you know, a big win type thing. And obviously the Bears got blanked in two games straight. That's never happened in the, you know, the playoffs. You were starting to wonder if they ever would score a goal again type of thing. But, you know, they came out and they got the job done, you know, 10,500 plus in the building at Giant Center on Tuesday. Great attendance for a Tuesday game. Those games have always been hard to sell out for the Bears, you know, just in general. But it goes to show you where we're at. The, you know, I know, you know, Dina, you said in our group chat before, you know, who had Ethan Frank scoring the first goal for the Bears in this playoffs? It was very fitting considering he hasn't had a single goal. You know, it was his first Calder Cup playoff goal, you know, his first goal since scoring a hat trick in the final day of the season. You know, it was back and forth, just such a, you know, a great high scoring game. If scoring's your thing, you were in the right place for game three of the finals. But, you know, and then again, you get a, unlikely hero like Riley Sutter, who's, you know, I don't want to go on and on here. I want to let you guys, you know, chime in here a little bit. But, you know, Riley Sutter, whose only goal in the Calder Cup playoffs to this point was him getting credit for an own goal back in the Charlotte series and the clincher for that one. So, you know, not his first Calder Cup playoff goal, but, you know, one where is his first where it came off of his stick and into the net type of thing. But, you know, that line's just kind of been a miracle working line in many ways over the course of this playoff for the Bears. And, you know, you got to give it to Coachella Valley as well. You know, they were down 4-2. You know, they could have easily said, darn, it's not our night type of thing. But, you know, they kept working. They kept working and they, you know, found some seams. You know, you look at the, I think it was Cole Lind who had the centering pass to Cameron Hughes for the tying goal in the last 50 seconds. That's something that, you know, the Bears have never really given up in these playoffs. It's a late goal of that, you know, that kind of variety type of thing. So, you know, it truly is a matchup of two superpowers. And, you know, what concerns me about the Bears is that, you know, again, their fourth or third straight game in this series where they've been cracked for four goals or more across this series, you know, that hallmark defense, you know, that makes, now you guys all have to check my mental math. I believe that's 13 goals in three games against for the Bears. And, you know, they've given up 25 all playoff season long before this point type of thing was the math I think I came up with earlier today. So it's a little, you know, less than ideal. You know, the Bears aren't a team that counts on their, you know, offense to carry them quite in that respect. But if they can, you know, that's going to be key in this series, it looks like, from here on out.
And you're right, it was 13.
All right, good. I'm mental math. You know, they always say, you know, you're better at math when it's something you love. When throw hockey in there, and I'm suddenly great at math. So
my backup introductory question this week, I'll just present it now and just kind of turn off my mic and walk away. Who is more clutch, Ethan Frank or Riley Sutter? One finally getting the first goal of his playoffs and getting. I mean, Hershey had been held shut out for two games straight. I mean, come on. He got that going. Or is it the guy that, in my mind, what did I say last night? That he had no business scoring that goal? Because it was ridiculous. One of the most ridiculous goals I've ever seen, but it works. But who is clutch?
I think it's Ethan Frank. And I'll say this for this reason, because I think that there's a lot to be said right now about the goaltender on the other side in Joey Decord, who's stopped 84 of 88 shots to this point in the series, which is pretty hefty considering that he only has 7 other playoff starts in all of his time in the professional game, which spans back about 5 years now. And even in his last most recent run in the playoffs, he had an .879 save percentage and a .315 goals against, compared to now where he's running at a near .926 goals against average. And so I think that there's kind of a lot to be said about going up against their good team and then blanking them for the first two. Obviously, it wasn't the same Hershey that we're accustomed to seeing throughout the year, but a very good Hershey at that. I do think that there's a lot of good takeaways. But for Ethan Frank to kind of break the ice a little bit, I think that kind of says a lot about kind of, I don't want to say a shift in momentum, but maybe a sign that things could be better on the other side of the hill.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen what Hershey's been bringing all playoff long. And then you look at what happened those first two games in Coachella. I mean, you can say whatever about the travel or being tired or whatever, but that wasn't this squad. And it, you know, it took them some time to get adjusted, but you know, it's once you kind of get popped in the mouth, I think that's kind of what you need sometimes to wake up and to realize like, okay, well, whatever we're doing is not working. Let's find a different way to attack it. Let's, you know, just kind of, it allows you to kind of step back and look at it from a different perspective and see, you know, how you can fit a, you know, a round peg into a square hole or just anything you need to kind of change it up and give yourself a different formula. I mean, you know, just because you're not producing doesn't mean like, okay, you just kind of throw in the towel and call it a time. I mean, obviously, we didn't expect a guy who's on the AHL All-Star team and setting records there in Laval to really be struggling to this level. But you know, the good thing about having this kind of squad around him that he has is to give you several opportunities, different line mates, different looks here and there to kind of just get back on the horse. Now, I don't know if it's going to necessarily bust open the floodgates, but I think just kind of getting back into his rhythm, not just for Ethan Frank, but kind of for the whole Bears squad, you know, to kind of everyone chip in. You know, it's never been a team that's just like, okay, we're going to lean heavily on one guy or the other. It's always been all hands in approach. You know, it's not Sam and Nas carrying the load or anything. You know, Coachella is very similar in that regard. I mean, I know that, you know, we all like to pump Potts' tires, but this is definitely a four-line machine team, and I think that's obviously kind of how you got to get here in this spot in this time of the year. But it's, you know, again, at this time of the year especially, it's, you know, we can always roll in with, you know, the momentum of two games getting shut out and, you know, just kind of let it wash over you. But you have two veteran coaches that have been here and at beyond at this level. So they're very adept at getting everyone to just kind of focus. I mean, it's very cliche to just be like, okay, just one game at a time, one game at a time. But you know, you can get kind of caught up when, you know, you say, oh, Coachella outscored him 9-0 in two games. Like, this is about to be a breeze. It's definitely not the case with this the caliber of team that you're facing here. So all that's just to say, like, Bears fans out there, just breathe a little bit. You know, we're only in game three. There's a 7-game series. It's I know a lot of it's, you know, not attacking, but, you know, you kind of you have guys like Hendricks LaPierre and Connor McMichael who were paid big draft capital who aren't blowing the roof off and everything. You know, these are young kids in a huge stage of their career here. They're kind of just getting to understand what it takes to set just that paper thin margin to separate a team that's very good from a team that's a champion. You know, I mean, both teams have these kind of calibers of players, but it's for young guys, it kind of takes them a little time to get comfortable in that setting. So I know it's very difficult this time of the year to just take a breath, but everyone just.
And this is your trademarked Holy Grail moment of Zen.
You're welcome.
It's been a while since we've had one of those.
I think the last time we had a moment of Zen, I think I botched it, and I don't think we've done one since.
Leave it to you. Zach, our resident chaos maker. In all the best ways possible.
Well, but one point I wanted to make real quick, Dina, going back to your original question about Ethan Frank versus Riley Sutter, I don't have an answer to that question, so I'm going to make a case for both of these guys. For Ethan Frank, you look at the stat, it's his first goal. You know, it's so huge in so many ways, not only because of the pressure that's on him in a sense. You know, he's a guy that, you know, he just signed an NHL contract for next season. You know, he's got this big opportunity to impress, all these sorts of things. But just for Hershey as a team, I mean, you look back to game two, that game could have been completely different. Had one of three posts, which I'm pretty sure was left post, crossbar, right post, if I remember correctly, in the first period, had any one of those three shots gone in, I think we're talking about a different game in game two. And is originally what was going to be the focus of this segment, had we recorded on Monday, would have been Corey berates the way that the game was called on in game two with the officiating, because there was six penalties on the Bears in the second period. Now, say what you will, some of them were penalties. Some of them, I think, were a little ticky-tack. Six penalties and a penalty shot, let's not forget. That, you know, it totally just threw that game in a blender. Obviously, all four goals of that game came at that point, too. So it was kind of just, you know, that game turned into a wash because of that. Let me just be honest for a second here. You know, truly, you know, if that happens, you know, maybe that still happens later on, but, you know, it changed the complexion of the game and it wasn't the same. But for Ethan Frank, not only was the goal important, but how that goal was scored, right? It was a perfect, picture-perfect shot over the right-hand, you know, short side, blocker side shot on Joey Decord, right? It was that, you know, all that kind of frustration of shots being just a little bit off, the chances not being quite right, you know, all kind of came together for that relief kind of moment there type of thing. And then for, you know, Riley Sutter, you know, for me, for him, it's deeper than just this series or this playoff. It's for him as a, you know, as a pro for the future of his career in a lot of ways. Is, you know, here's a guy who's been with the Bears for a number of years, dating back to the 2019-20 season, you know, had a hard time out of the gate. He was injured in a preseason prospects tournament of all things, you know, just a total bummer of a way to start. And, you know, Hershey's team was so deep, they just never really found a role for the guy. Right. And that was kind of the issue, was that he had a hard time staying healthy. He had a hard time, you know, a season ago, he looked like, you know, just kind of the odd man out in so many different ways that, you know, he just didn't have a spot. He didn't have a role. And then, you know, you give him credit under Todd Nelson's regime here, so to speak, he is that fourth line. You know, he's that identity almost of that line in a lot of ways. You know, he's been there for the entire season. He plays big minutes, you know, kind of the Brian Pinho role that, you know, he used to have, where he was that penalty kill specialist that you want to have, right-handed face-off centerman type of thing. So, you know, for him to get that goal is, in my mind, just, again, that fourth line just being so dominant, but, you know, a nice reward for him to, you know, I noted in his, you know, post-game press conference, he had his whole left hand was bandaged from his hand all the way up his wrist, you know, into his jersey type of thing. I don't even know how far that bandage went, but, you know, he's playing through stuff. Ethan Frank had that horrible injury to his right hand that he's been playing with for so long. You know, it's a lot of these guys, it's just, it's hard to pick one or the other because they both deserve that honor that mention so much, in my opinion. And it's a big reason why Hershey's where they are, is those guys, you know, getting this today. And you can't even ignore Joe Snively. You know, he's been chipping in assists, but he's a goal scorer, and he had a goal scorer's goal in game three as well. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hijack that, but I feel like both those guys have a great story in their own right to, you know, deservedly be heroes for the Bears in that game.
I mean, honestly, sitting down and watching game three, I think the word of the game for me was response. Not only just looking at the score sheet and it's Hershey, Coachella Valley, Hershey, Coachella, Hershey. You know, it's kind of like ping-pong it back a little bit. But I also think just Hershey in and of itself, they needed to find a response to being down 2-0. The officials who were getting criticized, I even saw reports of Todd Nelson requesting a meeting with the officiating supervisors after game two. You know, I noticed in this game, they were, you know, making sure everything was done perfect there. I mean, and the game was choppy because of that. There were a lot of restarts on face-offs, you know, they guys getting kicked out left and right because they just wanted everything to be as perfect as they could get it. So response there. And then, I don't know, it's, the whole night I just kept thinking, oh, there's that response. There's another response. You know, it's that was just my word of the night.
100%. Yeah. I mean, it was one of those things, you know, each team kind of had their own set of challenges. You know, for Coachella Valley, the challenge really was, you know, they're coming east. They've never come this far before, you know, to Hershey. You know, it's a unique atmosphere, not for all their guys, because there's so much overlap from that Charlotte Checkers partial affiliation from last year. You know, you think of just a myriad of guys that have seen the Bears. I mean, Carson Twarinski had one of the goals for Coachella Valley. He's probably the most familiar guy of all, playing so many, you know, a few seasons for the Lehigh Valley Phantoms, and, you know, really being familiar with this matchup as often as the Bears and the Phantoms seem to play each other anymore. So, you know, it was a challenge. You know, certainly, you know, you can't discount the effect of traveling cross country and, you know, several time zones across. It's just such a unique challenge for both these teams. And, you know, you could tell the Bears were feeling it in front of their home crowd. You know, they probably matched Coachella Valley in terms of their intensity and, you know, sheer volume and energy type of thing. As well as, you know, the Firebirds, you know, they could have wilted and given up and, you know, been like, darn, it's not our night. You know, we didn't, you know, quite bring it, you know, especially with Hershey up 4-2 at one point. That's a daunting task to try to find two goals in, you know, about half a period's time, as I think they had, a little more than that, I think. But, you know, you give them credit, they capitalized on their power plays as much as Hershey capitalized on theirs. You know, think of Cameron Hughes' first goal. You know, that was a third rebound shot. Number one, it felt like the puck was just kind of finding him, you know, pretty perfectly there a couple of times. But, you know, to stick with it, and that kind of, you know, chance, that just goes to show you what kind of player he's been for them this season. And he hadn't even scored a goal prior to game two of this series, too, which is unfathomable the way he's been those last couple of games. You know, 5 points in 2 games is very impressive to me for, you know, a guy who, you know, he had a lot of helpers. You know, he's far from being a slouch in these playoffs, that's for sure. Let's call it, you know, call it as it is. But, you know, a guy that has stepped up for them in a lot of ways. So, I don't know what to expect for game four, if we'll see maybe less scoring. I would say that your bets are all in on probably seeing maybe a similar game with a similar amount of goals. But, you know, it just has all the hallmarks of, you know, who's going to find their game first, in my opinion. Because I think Hershey has a lot more to give defensively. There's a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes I saw them making. You know, whether it's panic clears, you know, looking a little, you know, frustrated. Todd Nelson mentioned after the game, he felt they could have prevented 3 goals in different spots type of thing, right? Whether it was a, you know, failed clear on, I believe that would have been the third goal. You know, some just uncharacteristic, sloppy plays in the defensive zone. That's just not part of Hershey's game, right? They nearly got burnt early in the third period on a mini 3-on-1 down low type of thing that, you know, lest we forget, that could have been the decisive, you know, that fourth goal could have been a fifth goal and it could have been over by now. You know, I would be much more angry probably if that were the case. But, you know, it's one of those things. It's those little battles within a game that I think is going to be interesting to see how it unfolds here. So I'm sorry, I've gone on my chocolate covered rant for right now. So I'll let it, but you guys have it again. I'm sorry.
You're the one rocking the jersey, man. I think you're allowed to do that.
If I could add to that as well, I mean, Dan Bylsma said after game three that he thought the first few minutes of overtime were some of the best that they played throughout the series. And Dina, you kind of mentioned that it was a little bit of a scrappy series. And I think that's kind of a great way to kind of think about it as well, because you have to look at Coachella Valley and how they kind of got here. You know, their first series against Tucson wasn't really, it was a lot more skill than it was a lot about that grit. And that was the same against Colorado. And I know, Andrew, you kind of covered the Calgary and Coachella Valley series, and that was a pretty scrappy series. But I'm not sure if there was the same kind of comparisons in the first three games, because I mentioned when we were talking about the preview in the last episode that this could have a very similar taste to that, because it's two heavyweights going at it in a playoff series. But it kind of feels a lot different in that sense. I don't know if you kind of feel me in that way too.
Well, when Dina talked about response, that immediately rewound me back to game five between Calgary and Coachella, because I believe there were five goals scored in 7 minutes in that game between, you know, Coachella would score, then Calgary would score, then Coachella would score, then Calgary would score, then Calgary would score again, and then Coachella tied it up, and then Coachella ended up taking it there in overtime. But, I mean, it was just fast and furious every shot going in. And when you had Joey DeCord and Dustin Wolf, it was very uncharacteristic of both of them. But both those teams just rose to the occasion with the season on the line. And I kind of got those vibes here in game three, where, you know, you kind of feel like, you know, the series isn't necessarily on the line if you're Hershey, but if you lose, that's 3-0. It's kind of it. It's an elimination game without being an elimination game, you know? So they're battling, you know, Coachella wants to kind of put their foot down on their throat and get a stranglehold on there. So definitely felt eerily similar there. And you just look at, you know, what Coachella did to Dustin Wolf, what they did to Eustace Onanen, and now kind of Hunter Shepherd here dropping 13 goals against in three games. It's just the way that they've been finding a way to crack through a lot of these top tier goalies in this league. It's a lot of, I mean, they've been relentless on their forecheck, and they know how to pick their spots, man. And credit to the coaching staff between Dan Bylsma and assistant coach Jessica Campbell. They know how to kind of dial in and see where they can find a window, and they've been taking advantage. Now, if Hershey wants to try and kind of run and gun it, I don't feel like you want to try and get into a track meet with Coachella. I think that you kind of got to go the opposite way. You got to muddy the ice a little bit, get some like gritty sand in there, and just kind of try and slow it down and kind of get a little more, you know, collapsing in front of your net, help your goalie out, because this whole 4 goals against a game, it's not going to get it done. So I think kind of try and dial the pace back a little bit here, because, yeah, I think if you want to try and a shootout with the Firebirds, that's a good case to get burned real quick.
So just on the topic of Hunter Shepherd, real quick, that very early save that he had in game three on Eddie Wickow, I think that was like the game right there. Because if he would have bobbled that, let that go, not made that spectacular save that I didn't think that he had fully gotten on first look, I mean, just how important was that? What was the reaction inside of the Giants Center with that one, Corey?
Oh, everyone knows what Hunter Shepard's capable of. I've seen some doubts on him from fans on social media, which I think will always be the case, you know, whenever your goalie has a tough night type of thing. But it was an important game for him as it was for, you know, the whole Bears squad. And like you said, that he made a couple of big early saves. He had a couple of underrated saves, I think. I would say he was an underrated star of the game that maybe gets overshadowed a little bit because of the final score being 5-4. But he came up with some tremendous and important saves. I mean, you know, the Bears, you know, everybody kind of talked about getting that Ethan Frank goal, you know, the goal that he'd eventually score early on, you know, get this thing rolling in the right direction. But it's easy to, you know, forget for a couple of, before those two big goals, that and the Riley Sutter overtime goal, Hunter Shepard made some big saves and, you know, some calming saves, I think, too. You know, I think that, you know, that save was a one that says, hey, we got this, guys. We're in this one. This isn't going to happen again type of thing. And, you know, I kind of look at the overtime, too. There was a good period of time there where it felt almost inevitable that Coachella Valley would score just because they had all the zone time, all the chances. You know, the shot count was 6-4 in their favor, and that makes it look closer than what it actually was. And, you know, just as, you know, Zach, you said Dan Bylsma, you know, said that it was one of their best shifts. You know, Todd Nelson kind of said it the other way. He said, I think we tired them out because they played in our zone for most of that overtime. And that allowed them, you know, just that one moment of weakness that, you know, how often did we see it in the other two games that, you know, Hershey kind of threw everything in the kitchen sink at them in game number two in that first period. Coachella Valley endures and, you know, then they run away with the game, you know, in the second period type of thing. So we've kind of seen that role reversal where it's like you better bury your chances because you don't know, number one, how many of them you're going to get, but you're never sure, number two, how fast it's going to end up back in your own net type of thing. So, you know, I think you got to have some ice water in your veins here to, you know, be kind of cold-blooded and kind of lethal like, you know, a lot of those Bears goals were. And, you know, to what you guys were saying earlier about how Coachella Valley is so lethal with their shots, you know, how it was in the Calgary series, I saw that almost in warm-ups. You know, Coachella Valley's backup goaltender is Chris Dreidger, who I saw for a couple of years when he was over in Springfield during that Florida affiliation, you know, before he found his way over here. And those guys were so precise with their shots and warmups. They made him look like Swiss cheese. He's a tall guy. He's one of those guys. He's tall enough that, like, you know, the bottom of his numbers are against the crossbar on his jersey because he's just that tall. And they were just, you know, absolutely picking corners in some of those shots. So, you know, that's one of those things, you know, obviously the Bears have some good shooters. We saw, you know, Ethan Frank, Sam Annis even fooled the referee with how accurate his shot was. And, you know, even Garrett Pilon's goal was pretty, you know, sharp as well. It's going to be that kind of battle where you're going to see some precision, some, you know, these are some teams that can bury goals and may throw the MO for the Bears out the window unless they can really, really, really put a stranglehold on the Firebirds, which is just the million-dollar question that, you know, four other teams in the Pacific Division and the Central Division also are asking themselves, how do you do that? You know, it's kind of the question of the playoffs to containing Coachella Valley in my mind now that I've seen them for a few games.
So going back, and Andrew, if you could just kind of put that time down, I'm going to put it in earlier in the show. That way it's not disjointed, but yeah. I totally just like got caught up in it. But you know, you're talking about some of the shooters for Hershey, but we would be remiss if we did not talk about Cole Lind and Cameron Hughes for the Firebirds. I mean, their point totals are ridiculous. Cameron Hughes is at a perfect point per game, 22 points, 22 games played. Cole Lind, 28 points in 22 games played. That's like your team right there. Who else do you need if you got those two just totally running amok on the net?
Potts.
I love Potts. Okay, but he has what, 6 points? No offense, but still.
The man was out for 4 months, Dino.
Okay, true. Okay. Okay, yeah. I'm just looking at point totals. But
and I'll settle the waters a little bit, and I'll say that this is kind of what I expect to see out of Cam Hughes, because Cam Hughes is really a prospect that I think the AHL has kind of seen for a while, and the hockey community. But, you know, Cole Lind is really having, I want to say, like a month of his life, because like over the past few months, he's kind of turned up the heat, right? And I think we've seen a lot of that, even from the start of the playoffs onwards. This has kind of been like his time to shine. Some people are just playoff players, and I think that this guy is one of them. And he's got an eye for the back of the net. He's got an eye for those holes. And I always talk sometimes in my articles, I like to talk about having good on ice vision. And I think that he's kind of a really good example of that, of just how much a player can move around the puck, shoot well, and find those open areas. And I think that he's a perfect example of that. And we've been seeing a lot of that throughout the playoffs as well.
Okay, so if I'm going to rag on somebody for not having a lot of points on Coachella Valley, I guess it'll be Shane Wright. He also has 6. Now, he wasn't out with injury, right?
And that's kind of been something I've been a little surprised about, because if you remember early on in the season, he did play some AHL games and he was getting like points per game. And I really did think that Shane Wright would be something, you know, a taste of what the future could be, right? This could be the start of something huge. And just imagine if he comes into the playoffs, that you could write a Disney movie about it. He came into the playoffs and he did fantastic, and then he went up to the NHL and rocked it. But he's kind of slid under the radar a little bit, and he's just hasn't really been finding it out there in the playoffs and even throughout the finals as well. And I think that it's been a bit of a shock, at least to me, who's been kind of waiting for that sort of thing to happen from him.
He did have that real nice primary assist on the Carson Turinski goal last night as well. Sure. So, I mean, maybe it's just a matter of, you know, something, you know, since I'm a Hershey person, I have to say, I hope he doesn't find it. You know, he can stay quiet for the next three to five games here, I guess, or, you know, whatever we're at. Three, four games, whatever. Anyhow, he can stay quiet is the one I'm trying to get at there. But, you know, maybe it's just a matter of opportunity for him. You know, I mean, we've seen some of these guys, you know, it intrigues me with Coachella Valley, because, you know, I was digging in stats for some of the things for like the recap. Like Brogan Rafferty had a goal from the blue line yesterday. And he's like, you know, he's having a career year. It feels like, you know, just being on this team, both these teams in a way, is, you know, kind of like the recipe for success. You know, you kind of find, you know, whether it's, you know, Hershey kind of having that defensive edge that is surely going to lead to opportunities with the Capitals, maybe in their bottom six in the future. You know, you think of the Sutters, the Malensteins, you know, even the guys like Mason Morelli are probably going to draw a lot of interest, whether it be up or down. You know, you still got more to give for Connor McMichael and Hendrix LaPierre, certainly. There's just a lot of, you know, I think both sides have those guys that, you know, are surely going to be due for promotions. And, you know, just kind of like Ethan Frank on the Hershey side, I think Shane Wright's a guy that, you know, does have another level to get to. And we maybe haven't seen him hit his full potential yet, but it is the Calder Cup playoffs, the Calder Cup finals. It's a different beast. And, you know, it's taken some good players like that and maybe silenced them for one reason or another. You know, you just don't really, it's hard to explain, you know, for us that, you know, love to deal with stats and, you know, tell these player stories and stuff like that. It's one of those things where you just kind of go, can't explain it. It's just part of the, you know, interesting narrative that we get to tell in these kinds of playoff series.
I think we kind of got to dial it back here and think about it. This is a kid that just turned 19 back in January, who isn't necessarily getting the top line minutes that you might. I know it's a developmental league and he's a top five pick and all that, but it's still a little early to kind of rush him into the dogs quite. So this is what you're seeing, is a young kid kind of getting his feet wet and trying to make the most of opportunities where you can, like he did on the Twerinski dish. But overall, I don't think he's really going to have the opportunities to kind of get the chance to break a game open here, especially like, I mean, he's a teenager. He just was able to start drinking in Canada. He's still got to wait a couple years here in the States. So I think there's a bright future for this young kid, but I think to kind of expect him to kind of blow the doors down here is probably putting the cart before the horse.
You must have been channeling the same energy, because the more I sat here and thought about, like, oh, if I'm going to pick on somebody, I was thinking the same thing. Like, he was literally drafted a year ago. What am I doing picking on this poor kid? I mean, somebody's got to be the proverbial punching bag, I guess. But come on, they're up 2-1 in the series, and I'm picking on them because I just felt like picking on somebody, I guess. I don't know.
Someone's got to jump on the grenade, right?
Apparently. And thank you to Shane Wright for doing that for me, I suppose.
I mean, you could also say the same thing of Ethan Frankley. We talk about him struggling, and you know, obviously he scored 30 goals and all that sort of stuff. But it's easy to forget this is his first full year in the AHL as well. You know, he's a little bit older. That's because he took the college route to get to this point. But, you know, it still is just a massive – I mean, I've seen people say that, you know, that the – leap from juniors, college, overseas, wherever it is, to the AHL is the hardest leap, you know, harder than the NHL in many ways, because it's just a totally different style. You know, some guys thrive down in those situations. Some guys, you know, are, you know, sometimes built to make that leap straight to the NHL. Like, I can think of a couple of guys that came through Hershey that, you know, were not beloved by Bears fans, but, you know, went on to have successful and lengthy careers with the Washington Capitals type of thing. So, you know, I do think that it's kind of it's like you said, it's hard to, you know, can't rag on that guy just yet. You know, they have more to give. And, you know, it, again, it's just a totally different beast than regular season where, you know, you may find an easy hat trick game. You know, I say easy as if any game's easy, but, you know, it's easier to get those big kind of performances, you know, that space that, you know, everyone's competing for your extra inches just a little bit there. So, you know, I think it's just. It's one of those things, if it's not this year, you know, it's a great audition at the very least, you know, to say, hey, you know, look at the things they did do right. And, you know, I think both Seattle and Washington are two teams that are looking for players to promote. And, you know, it just depends on what roles there are to fill there too, in some ways as well. So, you know, every player is a little bit differently. If I'm Shane Wright and I'm, you know, in the AHL again next season, don't take it as a slight. Same way with Ethan Frank. It's just a opportunity to continue honing your game and continuing to, you know, develop into that player that, you know, not everybody's going to be suited for the fourth line, the third line. You know, some guys are second line, first line guys. And that's a combination of good development time in the AHL, as well as just, you know, the team making that space for you in the NHL level. So I'm sorry, that's my little development tangent, I guess, too.
All right, before my final question for the evening, I just want to kind of know your final thoughts on the series so far. Just what has been your moment of the series?
Ooh, that's a tough one to think of. I would say last night was the, or yeah, I say last night, you know, game three was the moment for me, because it kind of showed me, like, you guys know from me being in the group chat, you guys maybe had to talk me off a ledge a little bit a couple of times there, because, you know, it felt like, you know, oh my gosh, like, you know, I went into the series saying this would be Hershey's first playoff win in a single game in the Calder Cup final since 2010, right? Like, it was a long time coming. Then those first two games happened, you're like, oh boy, like, what just happened? Like, you know, are we ever going to score a goal again type of thing? Like, you know, was Shane Gersich's goal in that, you know, game against Rochester the last? And, you know, thankfully they kind of came and said, hey, you know, we got this, we can play with this. And, you know, I think it just turned the series into a different game, you know, different set of games. So, you know, maybe it sets the Coachella Valley games again. Now, obviously, if you're Hershey, you're taking it one game at a time, but you do have to win on the road now to, you know, it's still on the plate. You have to win a game on the road. So it's kind of your question down the road, can to kick down, you know, obviously take care of business in game four. So, but that's kind of been my moment, just because it kind of proved that, you know, hey, this isn't a one-sided breeze that we're going to see here. And, you know, really says that, you know, Hershey's got that character. They're going to give it here for the rest of the series.
And I think my defining moment goes back to when Corey said that the defense of Hershey looked a little panicked. And I do think that they did look a little panicked throughout those parts of those first three games. And I think that's exactly what Coachella Valley is going to continue to harp on, is the fact that they know that they have the Bears by this object. And I think that that is kind of a thing that they may need to look forward to in the rest of the series, is how can they kind of strengthen that grip and continue to kind of pounce on those opportunities. Notice when the ball is in their court, and then say, okay, well, they're fumbling the ball. That's when they need to start keep going.
Just got to give it a bit of a grab and twist a little bit. It's hard for me just three games in and just label like the one defining moment, but
just with the three games as you know, they are isolated. What's the moment of just, we're not saying moment of the series, just of the first three games.
It's, again, I'm just trying to like knock it down to one. I think it's got to be the Riley Sutter OT goal. I mean, if Coachella goes down the other way and pots one, the series is over. And tonight they could tie it up, depending on what happens. So that pendulum swing from one side to the next is really kind of what defines where we're at heading into game four. So, I mean, that's got to be it for me. It's basic, but I mean, I don't know where to go from there.
So I'm also going to take overtime in game three, but I'm going to put a different twist on this because the goal, Riley Sutter's game-winning goal came at 13:34 of overtime. But until then, up until that point in overtime, Corey, you said it yourself in our group chat, you had never seen so many mistakes on the ice as you had then. And I'm sitting here in my house in Central Ohio watching this just going, how is Coachella Valley not scoring? So if Hershey was able to ride that out, Hunter Shepherd locked it down and able to get his team the win once they finally got controlled possession, some zone time, and able to get the goals somehow. I still don't understand how that goal happened, but it happened. Thankfully for Hershey fans. But if that turns the series, if Hershey starts stringing together some of these wins here, and if we go into like a game six, game seven, you know, that could be the defining moment of the series. It's because Coachella Valley, whenever they truly needed to, you know, take a stranglehold of a lead, they couldn't do it. 3-0 versus 2-1 or 3-1. This is a total different thing than 3-0. So with that said, last question, who's taking game four? I'm not going to ask the series because it's too, I think that's too up in the air right now, but for right now, game four, who wins?
I'm going to say in front of the home crowd, Hershey ties the series up.
I like it. I'll echo that. I mean, that's obviously you're going to have a hard time finding me to, you know, pick against this right now on home ice for sure. But I think that it's been this kind of learning curve for Hershey with, you know, number one, that, you know, the first game they kind of, you know, I think had the wheels come off a little bit. They had to change a flat type of thing. The second game, you know, again, I talked about it being a bounce or two away from being a totally different score than what it was. And then, you know, plus the, you know, debacle of what it was. I think they're starting to find their kind of footing in this series. You kind of saw it a little bit there. I think they're going to tighten some things up defensively. I don't see Hershey's defense just getting torched for, you know, the remainder of the series and them having to score five goals every game. You know, I'm still saying there's going to be a low scoring close win. That's kind of the hallmark of the Bears. And I think this game might be it. You know, it's going to be more, you know, like we talked about that pendulum swing. This is it going the other way. And is it going to stay swinging that way? Will it swing back? You know, that's a question for down the road there, but I would say we see a little bit more of a, what I would call a traditional or, you know, vintage Hershey win maybe from the regular season.
And, you know, maybe throughout the episode, you guys kind of swayed me one way, but I'm starting to lean towards Hershey taking this one, especially considering that they've cleaned up on a lot of their chances. But I don't want to say that it's going to be an easy road to get there or as easy it may be perceived. I think that we're going to see a new level of Joey Decord out there. I'm really convinced of that. And I think that he's kind of learned a little bit from some of those goals. And I'm sure they didn't go in the way that he wanted. But That said, I think that it's going to be a very, very, very tight game going into game four. And I wouldn't be shocked to see an overtime.
Zach, you and I are thinking along the same lines. I was thinking another OT game. Sorry, Corey. Sorry, everyone in Hershey. Because I know that's not good for anyone's blood pressure or their hearts or anything like that. But game three was the closest I have seen Hershey play to their identity in this round. If they can stick with that, they're dangerous. They're super dangerous. We saw glimpses of what the Rochester Americans saw last round, and that was scary. But they've got to keep it together. So before we go, I found another list of AHL graduates that raised the cup, and we would be remiss if we also didn't acknowledge Ivan Barbashev, Keegan Kolesar, Nicholas Haig, Shea Theodore, and Zach Whitecloud. I mean, Andrew, thank you for this list.
Yep, and shout out to Braden Paschal and Paul Cotter, who are the Black Aces. I mean, they're just as important. Well, maybe not just as important, but they're pretty important during a playoff run. So, again, a couple more. Lots of former Wolves that are going to be that had their chance to raise the cup last night and will be getting their names etched on to Lord Stanley for all eternity.
Next, just to find out who gets on the Calder in the AHL's Holy Grail. We'll find out in a few short games. Will it be six? Will it be seven? I'm saying at least that, just so there's some intrigue, and hopefully it goes to seven. You know, for everybody's sake, because, hey, I like a good seven-game series. But that's going to be it for the Holy Grail this week. If you'd like to see or hear more of us, please subscribe to us on YouTube. Just type in the Holy Grail. We'll pop right up. Or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter. Same thing, at the Holy Grail, G-R-A-H-L. You can also check out all of Field Pass Hockey's other podcasts coming soon. An all ECHL podcast, The Coast Cast, with Matthew Harding and Zach Martin. That'll be coming your way soon. It's in pre-production right now. You guys, the show's going to be great. You'll love it if you love ECHL hockey. And then Matthew Harding teams up with Jason Malz as they break down the ECHL's Wichita Thunder and chat with some of the team's legendary players. Catch that bi-weekly, The Rolling Thunder, on Field Pass Hockey. And then, of course, Syracuse Speaks with Alexander Ackerman, giving you all you need to know about Syracuse Crunch Hockey. On behalf of all of us here at the Holy Grail, we hope you have an amazing week, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.
This has been the Holy Grail Podcast. Have a question or a topic suggestion? Hit us up on Twitter or drop us an email. For the latest news across the American Hockey League and the rest of minor league hockey, download the Field Pass Hockey app, now available in the Apple and Android app stores.